This is Jim Menick, and this is From Caveman to Frenchman, a lecture on postmodernism. Now, there's a lot of ways of addressing the whole issue of postmodernism, and in debate, of course, we tend to look at the philosophers of postmodernism. But I have a problem with that, at least insofar as trying to understand what postmodernism is in a vacuum. To understand postmodernism by looking at philosophers, you pretty much have to understand everything there is to know about philosophy up to the postmodern philosophers. You have to have the Enlightenment under your belt, and you have to have structuralism under your belt, and you have to have, well, just all kinds of things before we could really look at the postmodern philosophers. But postmodernism is more than just philosophy. And I think that there's another way of looking at it, another way that will in fact make it easier for you, if you're just coming to the subject, easier for you to understand what postmodernism is all about. And the way we're going to do it in this lecture is look at it from the perspective of art. Now, you may say, well, you don't know a lot about art, but you do know a bunch of things, because you've seen art, you've seen pictures, you've seen architecture, and of course you've read books. We're going to talk about novels and poetry and things like that. So we're going to talk about things that you actually do know something about, that you have a background in, so that when we move over to the ideas of the postmodern philosophers, we'll be taking them in the context not of philosophy, but of pure postmodernism. So sit back and relax, and let's see where we go. I like to think that what we have here is the story of narrative. Narrative. Understanding narrative is as good a way as any of understanding many of the chief concepts of postmodernism. It's also a pretty good way to understand a lot of other things. Narrative is, of course, another word for story. And everybody likes a good story. They always have liked a good story. They always will like a good story. And we're going to explore why. Now, this is a story told in multiple parts. Only the final part actually discusses contemporary critical theory, or, more simply put, postmodernism. To understand postmodernism, you need first to understand modernism. That's the thing that postmodernism is post of. And to understand modernism, you need to understand the past. Modernism is the modern version of what happened in the past. So, we are going to begin with the past. Or, more specifically, we are going to begin with the dawn of narrative. Part 1. Narrative. If this is the story of narrative, we should start with a definition of narrative. I'm using a very specific definition here, and I assure you I am not alone in my interpretation of narrative. There are plenty of narrative theorists out there, so rest assured I'm not just making this up. Narrative, simply put, is connecting the dots. The dots are the disparate pieces of perceived reality. So, narrative is the connecting of the dots that are the disparate pieces of perceived reality, which may sound like a load of jargon, but it isn't. I could simplify this and say that narrative is connecting the dots of reality, but that would, of course, assume the existence of reality. And we don't want to do that, not when we're going to end up talking about postmodernism. Most philosophers, and for that matter, most of the average McGeggies on the street, will tell you that there is such a thing as objective reality. There is a rock over there. There is a tree over there. We are on the earth. We are breathing air. The person standing over there is my brother, Kermit. But it doesn't hurt anybody to say, I perceive a rock over there. I perceive a tree over there. I perceive that we are on the earth, etc. If, in fact, there is such a thing as objective reality, I certainly am perceiving it as it is. No objective reality has been damaged by our adding the concept of perception of that reality. So narrative connects the dots of perceived reality. Now, there's all kinds of stuff out there, all kinds of dots, and narrative connects them. Why? Narrative, at this level, is the attempt to find order in what is apparently a random universe, to connect the dots of perceived objective reality into a subjective understanding. Narrative is an attempt to understand the world around us. Or at least that's one kind of narrative. There's others, but they're all connections of dots. Narrative, simply put, is connecting the dots. And let me just make an aside here. The human mind does not like unconnected dots. We see things, we try to make a pattern out of it. This is just the way our minds work. So one of the ideas feeding into this concept of narrative is the idea that our brains work that way. I personally maintain that the instinct to narrative, the instinct to make stories out of things, is what makes us human, that bit about the way the mind works. Things happen to all species. Cats and dogs live in a world of trees and rocks and air just like humans do, but only humans try to make sense of everything. And the way we make sense of everything is that thing called narrative. Unlike cats and dogs, humans connect the dots. And here's an important concept. I'm not just talking story here. That is, narrative as story, although the end result may be a story. I'm talking about the process of connecting the elements, the process that is also the creation of a narration. The instinct to narrative is both the instinct to make sense of things and the instinct to make sense of things in a certain way. The human mind understands stories. Understanding stories and creating stories are two examples of how the mind works. That's all a part of the instinct to narrative. Humans love to tell stories, and humans love to hear stories. This is actually a history of story, a story of story, if you will. And we'll start at the beginning, at the dawn of history. Let's set the stage. This is the period when early humans are living in sod huts and caves and trees or whatever, wondering where their next woolly mammoth is coming from. They've got a couple of chiseled pieces of flint they use as tools, and with any luck, someone in the group has a way with fire. Woolly mammoth sushi is okay, but woolly mammoth on the grill? Anyhow, this period is the dawn of narrative. This is the beginning of the attempt to make sense of the world in which we live. How does Woolly Mammoth Guy do this? He connects the dots of his perceived reality. He creates a narrative to explain his world, and by so doing, he invents science and religion in one fell swoop. Science and religion are one and the same, as far as Woolly Mammoth Guy is concerned. There's no difference. The first human narratives are stories of animism. Animism is the application of life to inanimate objects. The same root word informs animation, where somebody makes squiggles on film come alive. That person is called an animator. Definition of animism: the belief that things in nature, for example, trees, mountains, and the sky, have souls or consciousness. Second definition, the belief that a supernatural force animates and organizes the universe. Third, the belief that people have spirits that do or can exist separately from their bodies. First two definitions, belief that things in nature have souls or consciousness and that a supernatural force animates and organizes the universe, are the ones we're interested in. Animism imbues inanimate objects with spirit, or as the definition would have it, with souls or consciousness. The rocks and trees that are out there, those dots, those rocks and trees are somehow alive. They have spirit. Additionally, the phenomena we observe can't just happen. The sun doesn't just rise in the morning by itself. The sun is not an inanimate object. The sun is not a ball of gas 93 million miles away, at least not to Woolly Mammoth Guy. To Woolly Mammoth Guy, the sun is a living thing, an animated thing. That's the only way he can make any sense of it. Woolly Mammoth Guy has no tools to measure the distance to the sun or to figure out what chemicals comprise the sun. The only tools this guy has are a few flint knives and his own eyes to see with and his brain to think with. But he perceives a certain reality. He sees the sun in one position in the sky in the morning and another position at dusk and, well, nowhere at all at night. And his instinct, a narrative, forces him to make up a story to explain it. He can't sit still, looking at the sun day in and day out without an explanation for it. He connects the dots of his perceived reality. And as a result, he comes up with the story of the sun god. Now let's look at the Greeks, which is a few thousand years down the line from Woolly Mammoth Guy, but a good indication of how the story developed over time. In Greek mythology, the sun was a chariot on fire, pulled by two winged horses, driven by the god of the sun along the sky during the day. The Greeks, or if you must, Woolly Mammoth Guy, looked at phenomena they didn't understand and turned it into something they could understand. They got it right as far as the sun bringing life, giving heat and light to Earth. They created stories, which we refer to as myths, to explain these phenomena. They connected the dots the best way they could. When they created these stories, they weren't myths then. They were the explanation of reality. Okay, look at the stars. Woolly Mammoth Guy did. Cultural history is full of stories to explain the lights in the sky. Stories that have nothing to do with faraway suns. Woolly Mammoth Guy, with his instinct to narrative, couldn't just look up and see dots. He had to connect them. These are literal dots, too. Dots in the sky. Woolly Mammoth Guy connected the dots in the sky and made constellations out of them. This was a pretty common practice, apparently, among all cultures. I mean, imagining constellations. There's nothing a human being hates more than random, unconnected dots. There is an area of study on this, religion and cross-cultural perspective, that you can pursue further if you're interested. Curiously enough, there are often great similarities in the narratives from one culture to another. There's not only a need to explain the same things, for example, creation or the sun, but a similarity in the way that they're explained. There's a common thread of father-child that pops up often. In some Native American creation stories, the father sends down coyote to Earth, and coyote somehow ends up siring the race of humans. Prometheus steals fire from Zeus and gives it to humans. In historical times, we have Krishna and Christ, who were fairly contemporary with each other, bearing messages that were comparable to each other. It's no great surprise that humans feel compelled to concentrate on the same subjects, like creation, the first cause, or whatever. But it is surprising how often disparate peoples come up with comparable narrations. Why are they comparable? Well, that's another very arguable area of study altogether. We'll get back to that. So, we feel compelled to create a story of things. Why? The making of stories is part of human nature. But not only are people instinctively narrators, they like to hear stories. Hearing stories is the other side of the narrative coin. Not only do we like to organize random data, we like random data when it's organized by others. This instinctive drive to narrative, as discussed so far, the attempt to explain perceived reality, to connect the dots, to process random information, gives us a number of things. Woolly Mammoth Guy's attempt to connect the dots provides us with the beginnings of both science and religion. They start out, as I said, as one and the same. Animism must soon become quite different, at least as far as narrative is concerned. But there's another take on what narrative can be, and Woolly Mammoth Guy practiced this too. Narrative can also be the pure recording of facts. Let me tell you what happened. So the other big thing Woolly Mammoth Guy invented was history. Let me tell you what happened. Woolly Mammoth Guy is going to relate a sequence of events to you. He's going to tell you about the hunt today. How he and his brother Kermit subdued a woolly mammoth as big as his mother-in-law's cave. Killed it with one blow. Cut off all the meat in half an hour. Brought it home to great acclaim from the crowd back in the cave. That is history. That is the narration of a series of real events. Except, of course, the narration is selective. The narrator picks and chooses what he wishes to include in the story. For instance, Woolly Mammoth Guy leaves out the part where he and Kermit stop for a couple of skinny lattes on the way to the hunt. That picking and choosing, that selectivity, is part of the process of narration. I don't tell you everything. I tell you what I think it is important to tell you. I can't tell you everything. I have to pick and choose. This is important. All narration includes selective choices. In science, there are seemingly infinite phenomena. I have to pick the ones to study. I have to pick the way to study them. I have to pick among the parts of my observation to select the relevant and irrelevant, rightly or wrongly. In history, there are seemingly infinite phenomena. Let me tell you what happened yesterday. There are 6.5 billion people on the earth, probably more by now. I can't tell you what happened to each and every one of them yesterday. And why yesterday? Yesterday where? The historian is a great selector. There are schools of history that prescribe how the selection should be made. History is the story of great people or great events. History is the story of everyday life. History as determined by geography. Pick one. Woolly Mammoth Guy was unquestionably an historian. Selectively, of course. Selectively, but an historian nonetheless. As a matter of fact, Woolly Mammoth Guy left behind some of his narratives for us to study. The hunt paintings on the walls of the caves in France. Which just goes to show you how French this whole subject is. These are probably the oldest narratives in existence. Texts independent of the narrators, still surviving to this day. When we look at these paintings, we should ask, why this? Why not something else? Why did the narrator select this part of their lives to record? Why? Well, the selection indicates, if nothing else, its importance. They could have painted anything. There could also be paintings of gathering apples or making pancakes. Were those activities not considered as important as the hunt, which is what the paintings are of? Should we interpret that the hunt was the most important activity of Woolly Mammoth Guy's life, since it was the only one he permanently recorded? Or should we guess that the painters in the tribe were the same folks as the hunters? So they just happened to draw what they knew. For that matter, are we sure it's history? Maybe they just made up a story about a hunt. At some point in the history of narrative, embellishment comes along. Let me tell you what happened? No. Let me selectively tell you what happened. And in the telling, we not only pick and choose, we embellish a little bit. We make up a few details. We make the killing of the woolly mammoth a fight to the death, blood spurting out of every tusk. We make it a better story. The audience eats it up. And we embellish some more. And at some point, well, we just make things up whole cloth. And the creation of fiction has now taken place. Let me tell you what happened. Except it didn't happen. It's a narrative connecting not the dots of perceived reality, but the dots of subjective fantasy. It's still a narrative, though, and it still connects dots. We're almost ready to summarize a little bit now. Narrative is the connecting of the dots that are the disparate pieces of perceived reality. Narrative is the processing of random information. Narrative is the selecting of which dots to connect. Narrative is the connecting of dots that don't even exist. Narrative is a lot of things. The collection of random narratives of how things happen, well, that's science and religion, cosmology, first causes. The collection of random narratives of what happened, that's history. The collection of random narratives of things that didn't happen, narrative for narrative's own sake, to fulfill that innate desire that people have for narration. That's fiction. But we've left out perhaps the most important form of narrative, at least as far as modern theory is concerned. There is one other major aspect of creating narrative, and that is the creation of the self. What we know as individuals, what we remember as individuals, what we choose to define ourselves with as individuals. The individual. The concept of the individual is the narrative that we create for ourselves. Narrative is the connecting of the dots that are the disparate pieces of perceived reality. Okay. Every individual human constantly performs this act of narration as a part of conscious existence. Our brains are filled with random data. How we connect these pieces of random data is how we define ourselves, how we think of ourselves. What we remember and what we forget is the process of selection that is essential to narrative. We select among phenomena to create our personal beliefs. We select among events of our lives, which are 24/7, to create our personal histories. We embellish. We even make things up whole cloth. We create ourselves. Each of us, each individual, is a narrative of our own choosing, as each individual is his or her own narrator. Narrative is the connecting of the dots that are the disparate pieces of perceived reality. Each individual comprises a connection of the dots that are the disparate pieces of his or her perceived reality. The individual is a story of his or her own making.